The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you.
Good day, listeners. Welcome to another episode of The Big Red Couch. Today's episode, episode 54, tackles the ringing question, is there a market for Soylent Bubba? Today on the couch we have Craig.
Hello.
And Ben.
Hey.
And it's another two-man excursion into the mind of our serial contributor and guest star, Taz.
Indeed. I should point out at this point I've never actually tried Hubba Bubba, or Soylent Green, or any other of the Soylent products, despite what the rumours on the internet say.
The whole Soylent range.
Indeed, yes. I mean, soy products, yes. Not Soylent. Important point there.
Indeed. Quite a different thing.
Indeed they are.
So, are we going to kick this episode off with some Crash Cook Mercilogen first, just so we're really seeing the scene?
Fair enough. What variety of Crash commercialism were you thinking of, he says, laying out a blatant feed line for his co-host?
Oh, some sort of product placement, you know, like they have in the big movies.
Well, if we are going to sell ourselves out to Big Polyhedron, we may as well go all out.
Indeed.
All right. Shall I do the selling out bit?
You should kick it off. You were approached and therefore somehow our marketing representative.
Well, okay, technically I came in on the Big Red Couch email thing, but that would be bigredcouch@horde.net, incidentally.
Send us things.
We like stuff. We are crass, materialistic creatures.
We really are.
No, we got contacted by the very nice people at Evil Hat who wanted to know if we would be interested in previewing/reviewing the third volume in their Dresden Files RPG line, the Paranet Papers. And once I picked my jaw up off the floor, I said, yes, actually, we would. Rather than the sort of the Kev-style review, which is a minor essay in its own right, often with footnotes and properly formatted references, this one's more of a basically just kicking what is there back and forth.
I'm sure we'll get better at this sort of thing if we get sent more stuff. But for the moment, we'll just wing it for now, I think.
Also, nice, like it. Okay, shall I launch into the thing? Do you want to launch into how do you want to do this, Ben?
Well, just give me your impressions. What did you think?
Okay. Baseline impression from the thing, this is everything that I at least have come to expect from the Dresden Files range. You've got a book that is very nicely laid out. It's done in the same style as the other two books. So you've got a document that is in the process of being edited. So you've got the fun, sometimes funny, sometimes really not funny for very specific purpose, marginalia from the different people writing editor's notes for the next draft. The entire thing is done in the mode, as it were, of a role-playing game, so yeah, that works well for them, being written to disseminate information out into the world in a slightly obscured fashion.
Yes, the in-game universe explanation is that the crew that Harry Dresden runs with, or at least some of his associates, are doing a Bram Stoker's Dracula, which apparently crippled the vampires in the universe by letting out some of their secrets, in the form of a role-playing game. And this is how they spread the word. This is how you deal with these sorts of characters, or this is what you look out for. Plus, it's a fun game. So stuff enters the public consciousness.
Yes, in the world of the Dresden Files, Dracula was basically the mechanism by which Bram Stoker got the information on the Black Court out there, which is why there aren't any Black Court anymore, because suddenly everybody knew how to kill vampires.
And to that end, it's the fact that it's sort of apparently being edited for not copy, but content for specific revelations and so forth, does mean that they can slide in little references, sometimes very fourth wall intersecting ones, about the characters, about the status of the characters in the story, and what they're laying out in the rules and the world building.
Indeed.
That said, most of this is world building or examples/inspiration for your own world building. A lot of the content, how much would you say, good 80%?
I'm looking up the table of contents. I mean, this is a hefty friggin' tome. This thing comes in at slightly under 400 pages. there's a lot of material in here. Very roughly, the book is cut into two halves, and these are unequal halves, so that was a very poor choice of phrasing on my part. Two parts. The first part, which takes you up to somewhere in the mid-200s, is settings. They've basically given you setting information, and again, this is all done in the style of, here is the information that they started with, and along the way, they're converting it into game stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually done quite evocatively, because I found, particularly with the section on Las Vegas, there's a huge amount they don't know. And so they've got information. It was sent to them by somebody. They have no idea whether to believe it or not. It's kind of an interesting approach. So they've done Las Vegas. They've done Russia.
And that's a historical setting as well, which is a good angle.
Yeah, post-October Revolution, well, or possibly during October Revolution, Russia, 1918. They've got South America, a location in South America that my Spanish is atrocious that I'm not going to try to pronounce because I'm going to bugger it up. A location in Florida, and a section on the Never Never.
And some of these specifically relate to events in the book. And this ties in with the Our World of the two original books that were issued, the Your Story and Our World. These tie directly into the Our World side of that diversion.
That's right.
But also because it gives you as it's not hammered down as Word of God, and some things are set in different time periods, clearly there to inspire you and give you ideas for generating your own stuff or extending what they've put in there, which is a really nice free flow and suits the way that Dresden Files creates settings and lets people get into the games.
I can also see these write-ups and the fact that they've got four locations, for want of a better word, written up and done in the style of city and setting construction for Dresden Files. I can see that being of real use to anybody who wasn't doing so well or wasn't able to make the city creation necessarily work.
Yeah, that was something we had a little difficulty with initially. So yeah, that's definitely and there's plenty of inspiration for other sorts of things in there.
Because yeah, I know you tried a game at one point and there were sort of problems coming up with a setting.
It was more getting the idea, getting the engagement with, you guys are helping me make this story, and folks didn't really grok that as well as they could have. So even I was still sort of trying to struggle with that in that fashion.
But. And so having four worked examples, as it were, I can see being of a bunch of use.
Yep, and they're all quite different. They all display different things. One of the structural things which is nice about it is that each of these sections has different art style, different colour to the pages behind them. This makes it a little easier to navigate the book as well, which is nice.
Mm. Indeed. And so that's sort of the first half of the book first chunk of the book is effectively, here are settings. Here are settings, here are people within the settings, here are some suggested or possible options for player characters already made within the setting, who are already plugged into what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, but not quite, a plug-and-play, we want to play Dresden Files, and we kind of want to get started right now. I can see you'd be able to do that.
Yep.
The second half is sort of cut into chunks, is updates and additions to existing NPCs, again, from the Our World Dresden Files book, because you know, that was written a while ago now. The book series, the fiction series has continued. More information has come out, and so things kind of need updating. They've also got a chunk of, some of them are new rules, some of them are clarifications or alternate approaches to the existing rules.
It didn't strike me as being a big swathes of errata or optional rules or weird kludges. It seemed like these are things to do in specific circumstances, or maybe you want to try this.
Yeah, and it's about 30-odd pages of that, so there's a lot of it. And yeah, as you say, it's not errata so much as clarifications and different points of view. There are some legitimate extra rules in there. Most of them, it seems, to deal with how to do stuff that has come up in the later books.
And different approaches to magic and so forth.
Indeed. And some updated versions of the various in-setting characters, some new characters. Demon Reach is in there. Been a little bit too scared to look at that one.
I'm not up to date with the books, I think. How recent does it update the rules to? I think it's changes. Is that the...
It could be. I'm sort of looking for. Oh, here we go. No. Addendums in this book cover. Yeah, so that takes you up to changes and a bunch of stories that look to probably have been inside jobs.
Cool. So that's reasonably up to date, though Mr. Butcher does pound those books out with frightening regularity.
Pays to be regular.
And while we only have the, it should be clear, we only have the digital copy at our disposal, but given the page count, if they're getting the same printing and so forth done for, say, a hardbound physical copy, it will only just be just smaller than the your story set of the game rules.
Yeah, I will grab my copy of your story because it's sitting right there.
There are maybe two issues I had with the original Dresden Files game. There's the usual things of working through the rules and getting used to a new system. The two concerns that were raised most frequently is that no one seemed to like the cover art, and the cover art on this one is, I believe, better, but I was never really troubled by the cover art. It's a marketing thing. An attractive cover will sell a book for you, but once I got it, it's like, okay, I know what it looks like now, that's cool. This cover's a bit better, that's good. And those books, especially the larger rules-based book, is the first time I'd ever wished for a lectern, because this thing is heavy.
Yes. Yeah, for the three or four people out there listening to this show who haven't already played or seen the Dresden Files RPG, yeah, aside from the volume three that we're talking about, there's two books. There's Your Story, volume one, which to all intents and purposes is the game. That's the bit you absolutely need. The second one, Our World, is basically the world of the books. If you could only afford one book, Your Story would be the one to go for because that's the one that actually has the game in it.
On the other hand, if you just wanted a source book for the Dresden Files, Our World would cover you really well with a bunch of weird numbers and boxes.
Indeed, yeah, if you wanted. I'm not entirely sure why. There must be somebody out there. Maybe if they were planning to run it in Quags.
I have a D20 Moderns expansion for the Hellsing anime. I've never owned D20 anything, to be honest. It was a gift.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. All right. Yeah, so that's just to bring that up to speed. And this is effectively addenda. I'm not entirely sure how to pluralize that. Addenda to both Dresden Files, Your Story, so the rules, and Dresden Files, Our World, the setting. And they've chucked on in the vicinity of 250 pages of alternate physical locations within this overarching setting.
So it's definitely it's not just a splat book, it's not just extended powers and so forth. It combines a bit of implicit scenario instructions, it's an update to the world. It has, new places you can set games, or use them as inspirations for setting games in your own worlds.
Indeed. I just decided to flick to the back and see if there was anything lurking in there. Yes, they've. Wow, okay, they have. Yep, it's got a decent index. It's got an astonishingly good index. I should point out that the PDF has something that I quite like, hyperlinks.
Oh, nice. I did not spot that. And robust indexing is a sign of quality, it must be said.
Quick check to see whether they had sort of tables or anything at the back, but no, they do not. That's fine. Idly wondered.
It's not really that sort of system.
No,
There's
no.
the fate ladder covers most things.
And that is in the core rules. The one thing that I would wish for in Dresden Files, and to a lesser extent in many of the Evil Hat game lines, is that they have a particular style of doing games. That style is quite wordy. Fine, I like the way they do games. I have, for Dresden Files at least, wanted and done some work on, Kevin and Tonya sort of started it off, basically coming up with sort of a checklist or flowchart things for things like magic, because there are a number of steps. They are explained in the book. I kind of think about that sort of thing in more of a flowcharty line, and so a flowchart of do this, do this, do this, do this would be useful to me personally.
Something that breaks it down mechanically and gives you a nice, yeah, structured explanation. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, a worksheet for the sort of the long-term conjuring ritual magic would be kind of cool, because there are a number of kind of feedback loops in that structure.
So, if you're keen on Dresden Files, I think this would be a really good resource.
Oh, God, yes.
It has lots of, you know, if you want to say, oh, they did this in the books, how did they handle it in the game? And you've got a presentation of what sort of things are going on there. I didn't read too deeply because I am a bit behind on the books. I don't want to spoil myself hideously. Possibly the only other thing I was a little bit confused by was the first books. I found the annotations and the writing and so forth quite easy to follow, and I wasn't getting that as much this time.
In terms of who was writing what,
yeah,
or what,
yeah,
they were, they laid it out. Yeah, then in the first couple of pages there are a couple of signed notes who tell you who two of the people are, and you can kind of infer the third. So I didn't have, I did keep forgetting which colour and typeface, as it were, was which. Something.
That's hardly a big objection. There's literally flavour that they have sneakily added and used that blank space that turns up in a lot of places. So that was just, it was something that was not as well executed in the first one. But
yeah, something I quite liked about those was the way that for certain contentious issues, there's actual bickering between the various editors.
Yep. No, that's a really nice touch. I think that gives you a really clear idea about what's going on.
And, yeah, sort of lamp spotlights or lampshades, the
bit of both.
Some of the more contentious stuff, I forget which term, draws attention to?
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, so I will in all likelihood be picking up a copy of this thing. Just because, you know, for personal reasons, I find a physical book to flick through easier than a PDF. I mean, I'm working on the assumption that this is going to see print at some point. I didn't actually think to check that, because it didn't occur to me until this moment that it might not. But I'm assuming they're going to print it. They do that sort of thing.
Any cost-value analysis should probably be carried out by the person making the purchase, and based on their relative economic dispositions and how much they interest in the product. But it's definitely on par with the previous things that they've issued. It looks really complete and interesting. I don't know if this one would be vital to have in a physical format.
No, I wouldn't say vital. I mean, I wouldn't.
But, you know, if you have your mighty gaming bookshelf and it needs an extra tome in the Dresden section.
Yeah, yeah. If you haven't got quite the curve on the shelf in the Evil Hat section that you wanted to.
Yep.
If it doesn't look enough like a smiley face, then this would be a valuable contribution to that.
Indeed.
If I was thinking of people to recommend this one to, sort of people who already had the game, I would think it would be a hell of a resource if you were trying to introduce new people to the Dresden Files and didn't want to dump them into the full-blown game setting. Because there's a lot of material there. So being able to say, okay, we are doing a game set in Las Vegas. Boom, here's the chunk on Las Vegas. You don't need to know anything outside of that. I can see that being really useful for the right sort of person.
Yeah, and if, say, you have your own settings, your own games, it's running really smoothly, I don't think this will blow your socks up and supercharge your game, but it may give you really good ideas to break out into other directions, change things up slightly, give yourself like character advancement ideas based on the events that happen to the in-universe characters. You can say, okay, maybe somebody wants to follow that sort of path. Because they don't have like prestige classes or specific things people can follow, but you say, well, such and such is kind of doing the same sort of thing, probably inspired by reading the books. You can template that a little.
Yeah, if somebody got really interested in Soulfire, well, there's an entire writer. Mm. They have a, for want of a better word, a somewhat sped up magic system, or at least something for not killing the fun or not dragging the game to a halt as people add up the points and consider how many fate points to throw in.
That sounds like a fine idea, even though it is sort of like central to the idea of the game. Nothing bogs down any role-playing system quite like a slightly crunchy or clunky magic system.
Shadowrun, we're looking at you. And I love Shadowrun.
Yeah, and we don't care which edition you're talking about. All of them have this problem.
Yeah. It's not a bug, it's a feature.
At this stage,
yeah.
Sorry, we should kick Shadowrun while we're giving someone else
review. Oh, if you like, I could jump sideways and try to put the boot into the damage system from Millennium's End, because after a bit of practice, myself and a friend of mine who was an accountant and a lightning calculator managed to get the damage system down to we could resolve shooting and damaging in 30 seconds per shot.
And you were using rapid fire weapons?
I don't see how that's relevant.
Yes, I think that underlines your point rather than
evading the situation. Yeah, yes. That is the only game I've seen people actively try to avoid combat in. It's hilarious.
So, what are we going to do? We're going to give it the Big Red Couch seal of approval, of two fluffy cushions and an ottoman. What do we do here?
I would go with a rating of, oh yeah. If
that's stunning.
Okay. As a so system, folks, well, no, I do it. I do have a classification for that. That basically, if you're a completionist, you're going to buy this anyway. If you're on an incredibly limited gaming budget, you're probably not going to buy this anyway. For people in the middle, I'd say take a look at it. Read some more reviews.
Check out a sample.
Yeah, check out a sample if you can. Look at what's in it and decide for your own self whether what is in there is of use to you. If you're happy with the way the game currently works, if you've got no problems, and you've got all the setting material you could ever want, and you're not that worried about the fact that it's not quite in sync with the book series, then this book probably isn't for you because it doesn't hold anything you want. If, on the other hand, some of those previous statements weren't true, yeah, give it a look.
Indeed. The TLDR would be, we just talked about this for nearly half an hour, and the worst thing we had to say was it might be a bit heavy.
Yeah, that's fair.
Take that with your economy-sized grain of salt. And go with that. So, yeah. And big thanks to Evil Hat, allowing weirdos like us to look at stuff and have opinions about it.
Mm.
Still bewilders us, but you know.
It was a little surprising, yeah.
This episode isn't just one giant advertisement. Maybe we should get on to our topic today.
Oh, did we have one of those?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right, yes, okay. All right, I will, as it were, make room upon the desktop, and,
Oh, you sly devil, you.
And, okay, so, is there a market for Soylent Bubba? I came up with an idea for this while walking through a very pleasant urban park in Auckland.
Excellent. I came up with my idea in the shower, so you should go first.
Fair enough. My idea is... Well, the setting was PG-rated. I don't know about anything else. I came up with something perfectly horrible.
I'm not shocked. Leon McDuff.
All right. Basically, I kind of honed in on that word market and sort of looked at the phrase and thought, I think that's something that a person says. And so I tried to come up with a circumstance where somebody might actually say that. And what I've come up with is this, that there is a corporation, very large corporation, which is engaged in the business of trading between alternate realities, alternate histories of the Earth. They have the technology to open up a doorway to the Earth next door, or the Earth several blocks over, as it were, and they are constantly out there looking for marketing opportunities. What can we sell to who? What's out there? And this company... is not an amazingly nice company, as evidenced by when they open up they get the coordinates figured out, because presumably it's not just you click a dial or type in a number. You probably stuff needs to be focused. There might even be particle accelerators. Those always look good. And so they've opened up a portal. They've sent some probes through and they've discovered that what they've got there is a world. It was a technological world, very much like their own. Only some sort of nanotech issue has occurred. Runaway nanotech.
Praise nanotech.
Indeed. Except in this case, it's presumably some sort of manufacturing or raw materials extraction nanotech that has gone through, has latched onto organic molecules, just any long-chain carbon organic molecule is the sort of thing I'm talking about here. So everything from oil to flesh to dead skin cells to rubber, anything like that. And has basically broken it down and consolidated it into handily usable chunks. Maybe cubic centimeter or so. The sort of thing that would provide very good feedstock for the next process. So presumably this is the sort of thing where if you might have been developed for a garbage dump or something, you've got an old landfill, you know there's a bunch of organic crap in there, you set this stuff going, it converts everything that's in there into effectively this little lump of kind of squishy plastic that's a convenient size to just be scooped up by some guy with a shovel, fed in as feedstock for the next process in the chain. And so this portal is opened and they're looking out onto a world where this has happened, where every organic thing, from the bacteria in the air to the bacteria in the ground, and certainly all of the people, have been converted into these little rubbery chunks of plasticky stuff. And the reaction of the people running things is to pick up one of them with a set of tweezers, squeak it a couple of times and say, is there a market for Soylent Bubba?
So, it's a grisly setting. And that's kind of weird and unnatural. It's almost as bad as my plan to send a bunch of fantasy adventurers to the dimension where whenever you break a glass object, one of the pieces goes missing and winds up in this dimension.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's just the dimension of pointy glass shit.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought that would be it. Apparently I didn't like the players very much. Anywho. So, you're a world of little organic cube stock. So, the game. That's where I'm hazy, to be honest.
The game took me a little while. I think the game would fall into a similar category to, if anybody out there remembers it, SLA Industries.
You are going back a little way there, yep, but I have a copy myself.
Oh, wow. Was it one of the ones that had the really awful glue on the binding?
It's still mostly held together, but I haven't opened it for a while.
It might
just disintegrate next time I crack it open.
Yeah, I don't know whether this was a worldwide problem or just the stock that got to New Zealand, but I wandered into a game store, was looking at a copy of SLA Industries on the shelf, and the guy running the store sort of wandered over and asked, was I planning to purchase that? Because he would totally sell it to me, but they were expecting stock that didn't fall apart soon, and I might be better to come back then. It was that bad. Brand new copies of the book, you'd open it and pages would fall out.
That does happen occasionally.
Indeed, yeah. I think probably just a bad batch. But in that one, you've effectively had people working for this very large, very old, very powerful, and very unpleasant corporation that owned entire solar systems. And in this case, I'm imagining a group of players, or the player characters, are working for this company where the reaction of, is there a market for Soylent Bubba, isn't actually out of the ordinary. They are effectively working for Big Evil. I haven't decided yet, and I think it would very much depend on the players, whether they are working for them as an attempt to subvert, maybe as an attempt to escape something, or if I wanted to do a quite structured campaign, I could see that being a fun kickoff for, you know, this is what you're dealing for with the company. And it turns out they're hiding something really unpleasant.
The alternate approach is possibly that these folks are part of the society, which is, you know, hierarchical and very corporate and basically fucking evil.
Mm-hmm.
But they've found a resource that which they might be able to fight the man and rise up and create a new, more just order. But the engine with which to do that is more evil.
Yeah, we've got a way to do this. It's just a monstrous thing.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's not our dimension. Maybe we're okay there.
Mm.
Yeah, it's
And I was sort of debating the, you know, if you worked for a company like that, and you were, you know, of the mind of, well, okay, this entire world is dead. Nothing could bring that back. Mm. So there's nothing really we can do here. And then you find another world where exactly the same thing has happened. And you start to think that maybe the company is using this to clear real estate, or possibly very valuable worlds. You know, if for example you've got this company and they open a door through to a world that is technologically extremely advanced in certain areas, and has no real interest in trading with this pack of corporate hyenas, then there's an accident.
Yeah, that's hideous. Wow.
Indeed.
I thought my you'll yeah. Okay.
It could possibly be argued that my views of corporate culture are not that rosy at the moment.
At the moment and ever is possibly also a good answer. But yes, what you've suggested reminds me of the Charles Stross The Merchant Princes series, in which folks from different dimensions have trade agreements and houses that span different things, and, you know, can reach different parts of the universe.
Cool.
Which is interesting. That's another, Charles Stross is another author who has several literary irons in the fire dealing with fantasy and science fiction and different sorts of things. So that's interesting.
Mm.
Okay, so that's kind of the most sort of gross conspiracy ever kind of thing. I'm pretty impressed.
I was glad to have come up with an idea, because I was having a little bit of trouble with that one, but not perhaps as glad as I could have been to come up with a less horrible idea.
Yeah, that would be Shall I go over my approach? Because it might shed some light on why I haven't added to it, or just basically been making a face the entire time you've described.
Fair enough. I mean, I do have a warmer and fluffier version of that basic idea, but should we go with yours and then maybe bounce back if I remember?
Well, pretty much my idea is no, don't do it. And this is a first. We've not actually had a collision between people's ideas coming up for the game. I looked at the idea and I went, how does this break down? That's terrible. Let's stop now. Like, in some circumstances, is there a market for Soylent Barber? It might appear in an action game as a quip just after you've pushed a beefy southern gentleman off walkway into, like, banks of flashing knives and some sort of food processing thing. And as just, like, a one-line throwaway? It's gross. It's insensitive. But, sure, that happens. If it is talking about marketing cannibalism, I have real problems with that.
I see. You do not want to be the guy who ran or wrote that game.
It appears in games and settings, things like Tasty Ghoul.
Is that the underground?
It's an underground. There's the long pork chain and Transmetropolitan and so forth. Yeah. And most of these are like cloned human flesh and so forth. Which, and you know, I think some of the like the long pork is like with the advertising on the stand, on the thing is leg of bastard. Things
roast leg of bastard, that was it, yes. Yeah.
And a little thing. But this immediately implies that society has little or no regard for life or dignity. And that's not a great start. The whole Soylent Green thing is interesting, because it didn't actually appear in the Make Room book originally that Harry Harrison did. I got Harry Harrison right this time, didn't I?
Yeah, it was Harry Harrison, yeah. I think in the book it was... I think the starting moment of the book was when a street kid, or almost but not quite homeless kid, manages to pilfer a box of soy steaks. So effectively, yep. Food.
Yes. The pressures were kind of the same, that there was like next to no clean water, there was next to no food, the population had skyrocketed, you know, up to today's current standards, which is where the whole Malthusian problem is, hasn't actually arrived. There is enough food to feed everyone if you can move it. Just who's controlling and profiting from it is the concern we have today.
Yes.
So in the, sorry, spoiling 50-year-old movie, Soylent Green is people thing. They whacked on the end of the film as a bit of a shock value kind of thing, and you know, good theatre, good film. Yeah, that's well worth seeing.
Mm.
Even though I just spoiled it.
I think at this point, I'm sorry, I don't know what the statute of limitations is, but 50 years old, come on.
That also helped inspire one of my favourite in German industrial tracks called Soylent Dreams. It's the
I see.
Lyrics from the German version of the movement. It's quite punchy. I'll link that up if I can find it. Anywho, all right.
Whereas I've just seen it as a reference to yeah, somebody's comment about, well, I applied for a job in HR, but I mean, the only real thing I know about that is Soylent Green is people.
Yes. So it kind of doesn't make sense in the context of the film, because if you're feeding the living the dead, it's not really supportable. By the time that you've got people dying fast enough to feed the living, and you can mass process this, things are out of control. This is literally the last step, because things have entered a pretty much closed system, and things are going to stop.
Yes, things have gone so badly wrong that they're not, in all likelihood, coming back.
Yeah, so that's a bad sign. That's pretty depressing. And you know me, I will splash around like a happy little sadness piggy when playing role-playing games, the puddles of depression and so forth. I'm good with that, but this is a bit too far. On top of that, it's kind of... Historically, cannibalism either comes out of an extension of, sort of like, spirituality or even esteem. You know, you take someone's strength by eating their heart or something like that. Desperation, the Donner Party and so forth, people starving to death. Or, you know, the sensational extremes of mental illness. If this is something people are marketing to, the culture, even if they've supported this with, like, cloning and so forth, the culture in question is messed up. Or possibly not human. That's the other thing that made me think of was the movie Braindead and Crumb's Crunchy Time Delights being processed for the galactic market.
Yes.
So that's a whole kind of distasteful. And on top of that, the fact that you kind of got a regional stereotype on top of it, it's like, oh, this is troubling. This is really kind of weird. I'd started drawing the Venn diagrams of, like, Soylent. Okay, Soylent is kind of like dystopian and apocalyptic, and cannibalism all overlapping. It's like, dystopian apocalyptic. Yay, love it. Dystopian cannibalism. Okay, that makes sense. Apocalyptic cannibalism. Sure, whatever. Okay, Soylent, I can get behind that. It's a bad thing, but okay. When you overlay regional stereotypes, and hillbillies might be the last ones, it's culturally appropriate to make fun of. I don't think that's going to last forever.
See, I didn't get with... I didn't match up Bubba with the name. I matched up with Hubba Bubba, the...
That is interesting. I find
food stuff.
Apparently it comes from, like, the eldest brother.
Huh!
Can generally be an affectionate term. But largely it kind of refers to a lunk. But, yeah, going on with that marketing and Soylent, the overlap's like, oh no. Except for the fact, you know, stereotypes and marketing overlap in real life. Which is...
Yes. Sadly.
This is the sad part. So, yeah.
Okay, so this was your bridge too far, as it were.
Yeah, if I couldn't come up with an idea, I thought, what if I break it down? I broke it down, and I looked at it and I went, oh no.
I've made it worse.
I've made a terrible mistake. Yes. So, I came up with the conclusion that I don't want to go anywhere with this one. Thanks, Taz. You've broken me.
Well done. Yeah, had to happen. I'm surprised it took this long.
It's just, sometimes, I mean, maybe this is a useful process. Maybe if the boys who made Fatal sat down and thought, okay, we really need a game where rape is the natural outcome of a failed dice roll, or a successful dice roll, I've only heard rumours, maybe they would have, you know, maybe they'd consider things a bit more deeply. Maybe it would never have happened.
Okay.
So, that's my contribution. I'm a great big wet blanket on your cannibal apocalypse party. Sorry, guys.
Whereas, you know, I did come up with a somewhat more comedic version. Well, you know, comedic may be the wrong word. A less horrible version.
Please,
of,
save us.
of still going with my basic idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if I did not want to do the SLA industry's grinding horror approach, and thinking about it just off the top of my head now, I am sure that there are games out there in the indie game area that could be morphed to work with that. I am wondering whether... Is it Misspent Youth?
It sounds like a possible setting for Misspent Youth. You could...
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
But it would be, depending on where the players start out and so forth, there might be sort of like cubicle or oppressed worker uprising.
Indeed, chair moisteners from Section 7B, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So it could have aspects, and definitely because part of the process of Misspent Youth is you ask the players to describe what they hate about bullies. And if they said... environmental disregard, disregard for lives, accumulations of thousands of little black rubber cubes. You probably easily put them together to make this particular version of the authority.
Oh, I was assuming the little cubes would be pink or green, depending on what they were made out of.
I was thinking of chunks of tyres that have been sawn up.
Okay, I was trying very deliberately to go for...
For bubblegum.
For bubblegum, yeah.
You sick humanoid.
Can't be helped.
Indeed. So what was your comedic version now that I'm totally horrified?
The comedic version is more... It would be more a case of what light you shone on that previous idea. That you've got this company that is evil, but you kind of make them cartoonishly evil.
Right, so Captain Planet villain evil sort of thing.
Yeah, Captain Planet, well, maybe not that... got awfully cheesy. But yeah, it's effectively the lens through which you look at the game. So it's going to be less a case of we open up this portal, we go through, the entire world has been churned into these chunks of stuff. In the horrible version of the game, it's cool, what can we... Yeah, we're going to have to clear this stuff away anyway to get at the natural resources. Can we do anything with this? You know, can we dust this with sugar and sell it to people? Is it edible? This kind of thing. Is it non-toxic? Is there a market for Soylent Bubba?
Yes.
Is the dark version of it, I'm just imagining the slightly lighter version of it, where you've got the crew sort of, they've opened up the portal, you've got the shiny suited git from marketing who's come down and looked at it and said, is there a market for Soylent Bubba? And the two people just sort of share a look, shrug, place one foot on each buttock of this guy and boot him through the doorway and then close it behind him.
So it's like the inciting incident to general uprising.
Indeed, or to lower levels of uprising, done in a somewhat cartoonish manner.
Mm.
Yeah, if I was trying to run that sort of game, where you've got people who are working for Cartoonishly Evil Inc. and trying to foil Cartoonishly Evil Inc., then I think it would be much more of a setting of the week kind of scenario, and try to build those towards a conclusion.
You're right. It could be an interesting place to visit. The place where consumption of human flesh, how it's generated, is a done thing and not taboo at all, or even considered to be taboo. And your Stargate team or your Sliders people step through the door and go, "Well, that's a fine how do you do?"
Yeah, that's just all kinds of wrong.
Yeah. Making it a native setting. Yeah, I think I've explained my feelings.
Yeah, I think we received that message loud and clear. Yes, so this I find kind of interesting. The idea, once I came up with something, I obviously went to a dreadful, dreadful place. But that it does sort of speak to the gaming ideas that you don't use. The things that you come up with and then think, no.
Yep. That the place made entirely of broken glass. Tiny, tiny bits of broken glass. Other things. Yeah. Maybe there is a place for the bin of bad ideas for role-playing games. And I don't know if we're not champions of it. I think we should acknowledge that it's necessary.
I used to have my file of dumbass game ideas. I mean, that's what it was called.
The Ballad Knight?
Yeah. There was all sorts of ridiculous crap in there. Vampire the Limbo.
That's the dance?
Yeah, it was the idea of a Vampire the Masquerade setting, where what you basically had were a bunch of vampires who looked at vampiric politics, decided that this crap was going to get them killed, and buggered off to the South Pacific. Or the Caribbean. The idea that the Tremere Chantry is this inexplicable ruined gothic chapel on the beach. It just makes no sense. and that what you've mostly got is a bunch of vampires just hiding out, waiting for the vampiric apocalypse. I forget what that was called.
Gehenna.
Gehenna. Waiting for Gehenna in the hope that it would just quietly happen somewhere else and not affect them at all.
It's probably a vain hope, but I like their style.
Yeah, waiting out the apocalypse, or the whole thing of somebody higher up in the vampiric pecking order is coming through, and so all of a sudden everybody has to try to fake being these vampire clans who are at each other's throats all the time, and that this is an important location, but not too important.
Yes, explaining the basically Halloween-themed tiki bar that is the Elysium is going to be a bit of a problem.
Indeed. Yes, mostly it's just a bunch of vampires pissing about and preying on the tourists in a way that the tourists don't notice. That was probably the best of the ideas in my dumbass gaming ideas file.
Indeed. We might have to make this a regular corner. Things that we couldn't even dare to put into role-playing games. Well, I hope I wasn't too much of a downer, because...
I don't think so. I was interested, because you took a completely different approach to me. You tried to come up with a world where that made sense. And yeah, I can totally understand getting to there, looking around and saying, nope, makes sense. I didn't end up there, so my viewpoint was different. I'm not entirely sure why I'm waving my hands around to explain this, because we're on an audio podcast.
Indeed. It's important. It speaks to voice acting and attitude. So.
Nice. Let's go with that.
Indeed. Well, there you go. That's our first terrifying flame out of a suggestion from one of our audience and sometime co-host.
Indeed.
And terrible commercial sellout hour.
That was fun.
Indeed. It made me feel all wealthy and warm inside. No, we're not getting anything for this.
I felt kind of tingly, but yes. Yeah, it's a bit cold here, so that could have just been circulation issues. I'm not sure.
Indeed. So, well, thanks to folks who contributed useful, meaningful input, and we'll include Taz on this because he was good value and we should probably get him back sometime.
That would be good. And that was an interesting idea.
It definitely provoked thought.
Indeed. And really, that's about all we can hope for with this show.
Literally, yes. If you have a thought while listening to our show, we have succeeded in the only measurable way possible.
Good night, audience.
Good night.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
The 13th Interplanetary Curling Competition.
Yes.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!